Welcome to another edition of the XFEP podcast. It's kind of a special edition this week because I've actually coerced someone to come and join me on the show, so you won't have to sit here and listen to my voice the whole time. I have the extremely talented designer, Chris Garrett from Chris Garrett Media on with me. Say hello, Chris.
Hi, David. Hello, everybody.
And we're going to go through some of the stories that I found interesting from 45N5's top 100 list. And I'll have lots of show notes on that whole thing. And because I have Chris on here, we're going to try to keep it to a design slant. No reason not to use his expertise while we have him here. The first story that I picked out was about the 125 by 125 pixel advertisements from problogger.net. And it asks the question, are those types of advertisements good for you, or are they right for your blog? And I kind of mentioned to Chris before that the designer that I like to use, Alana, is really good about making sure that the design fits, you know, standard advertising sizes. And, you know, he kind of hit me back with the whole grid model is better thing. And I said, well, you know, I think it's more important to design around ads than design around anything that's kind of, grids sound kind of stuck in their place to me. You know, you were telling me they're actually pretty good to use. Why, like, can you design a really good design around these advertisements?
If you're using a standard pixel grid, then it's really easy to incorporate adverts because obviously you've got set pixel sizes which you can work with. The problem I find is actually when I tend to use M's for my layout, so that everything scales with font size. And I try to make my every image that's that needs to be readable scale as well. So it's set as an M value. Its width and height set as an M value. So when you come to adverts, you kind of I would probably make those M values rather than pixel values. And in that sense, I guess the bigger the font size is, the bigger the advert's going to be. So,
which would be nice for an advertiser, I assume. You know, they get to see their advertiser bigger on bigger font sizes or bigger resolutions and whatnot. But doesn't that make the graphics look horrible?
If you think that the sort of people that are going to be scaling the font size up are people that have visual impairments, you would tend to think that actually they're not really going to notice the degradation of quality because they're likely to be short-sighted or something like that. So it probably won't stand out to them, whereas it would stand out to a perfectly sighted user.
And actually, it kind of brings up a good side point, because if I was an advertiser and I knew that I could reach that market better by having my graphics scale, I might actually be more likely to advertise on that website rather than someone who they pick a pixel size, be it 100 by 100, 125 by 125, 150 by 50, and you're stuck with that no matter what the user does, and then you lose kind of that little sliver of the market. Things are a little different over in Europe than Canada or the States. You guys actually have to kind of obey certain rules and regulations now when it comes to dealing with users that have issues with sight or hearing or whatnot. Isn't that true?
That rule applies to public sites like online shops and things like that. I'm not really sure how rigidly it would be enforced for something like a blog. But yeah, government sites, anything that might be used in real life, like a shop, I think they all have to be accessible to people with disabilities.
Yeah, well, and as bloggers become kind of a bigger group for, you know, pushing mainstream news online, I guess it would be kind of good for them to follow those same rules as well.
Yeah, my opinion is always that every site I do should be accessible to as many people as possible, just because I want to keep my potential market as full as possible.
Yep.
And obviously by not being accessible, you're cutting down on your potential reach.
That totally makes sense. Moving on to our second story, though, I grabbed one from performancing.com, and it references Darren Rose's video about blogging for the long haul, and how your blog, if you focus on increasing your market at a certain growth every month, that you can eventually make upwards of hundreds of dollars a day. This is, you know, kind of reaching a little bit, because no one's going to have, you know, 30% growth every month per se, but it's definitely a nice little dream. while this doesn't really reference design all that much, it you know, it's something that I think designers can see as well. If they can continue to raise their rates or continue to bring value to their market, then there's no reason why they can't be worth more and more every month or every year. Have you found that in your experience, or have you felt that you're locked into kind of a certain price over a period of time?
I haven't really changed my prices that much in the past year. But I think some of this is that you actually, particularly as a designer, you build up a reputation over time. So the more people you service to start with, the more people they'll refer to you. So it's kind of like a snowball effect, and gradually you can get more money coming in that way rather than actually raising your prices. And I think that probably applies to blogs in terms of growing their traffic.
Or at least we hope it does.
Yeah, definitely.
The third story on the list comes from 45n5.com. And he talks about changing your affiliate banners to kind of fit your design a little bit more. This is something I haven't seen very many people do. Usually you just take whatever advertisements the advertisers give you and plaster it on your site and hope that it converts into revenue. Have you had to deal with integrating advertisements in certain designs that you've done? You've done a fair number of sites, so surely you've had to deal with that in the past.
I have, yeah, but to be honest, my recommendation is always to have your adverts stand out as much as possible. Because if you're blending adverts into your design, then it's kind of going to affect your click-through, because people will more than likely just sort of skip over them.
But if you had a design that you gave to someone and they put a god-awful flashing red and white banner that's blinking all the time, doesn't that kind of, you know, pull at your heartstrings a bit? Doesn't that feel like a little jab to the heart that they didn't try to integrate it into the design work that you had done?
Yeah, it's definitely disheartening. But at the end of the day, I mean, my clients have to make the money they can, and I think, I'm not sure, I never really thought about how adverts impact on my design that much, because people just seem to come to expect adverts, if that makes sense. So, to be honest, I would prefer that adverts are tailored to the site's design, because it kind of creates a better user experience. But obviously, the more obtrusive the advert, the higher the click through is going to be.
So it's a strange balancing game once again.
Yeah.
Our next story comes from johncow.com, and that's not johnchow.com, that's johncow.com, the very popular site that kind of uses John Chow's success to build its own success. And in a recent post, they talk about how Small Potato had published a blunt but personal opinion about Nate Whitehill's unique blog designs, and basically there's a little bit of a rivalry going. You've provided services to bloggers in the past to redesign their sites. Nate has just appeared out of nowhere with unique blog designs, and you know, johnchow.com, shoemoney.com, and a whole bunch of other sites are now using a unique blog designs blog design. And a lot of people are saying they're not unique, they're nothing special, they're the ones that they have for their paid service that are $79 aren't worth the money attached to them. What do you think as a designer? You've done the WordPress side, you've done higher level designs.
Yeah, I've always had problems actually in that the free templates that are available for WordPress are mostly designed by professional designers. So design-wise, they're actually going to be at a high, you'd think they'd be at the same sort of level as a commissioned design. And I've often had people sort of comment on that, and it's just, it's kind of awkward to do a design better than a free template because the free template is designed by a professional. But when you commission a design, you're actually getting the uniqueness of that design, and it's more tailored towards your blog. And I think what a lot of people also overlook is that actually you get a much higher level of customer service when you commission a design. So it is very easy to look at something like Nate Whitehill's designs and say that they look like free themes, but actually there's a whole sort of wrapping service that's gone with that, whereby he would have made recommendations to the client. He would have told them a bit about how to write an effective blog and things like that. So yeah, I think it's an argument that's going to carry on, but I don't think it's a very fair argument, to be honest.
when I look back at this, it just kind of makes me laugh, because I think as WordPress bloggers especially, we really expect everything to be free. And we don't like when someone makes us pay money for something, and we don't like when someone charges us for added service. And especially as the themes on WordPress are getting better and better and better, it's getting harder and harder for designers to kind of, like you said, you know, kind of beat those free themes and give that level of service and that level of quality that hasn't been seen before.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting, you know?
Every man's worth his time as well. So Nathan's going to have to spend a certain amount of time on these themes and just sort of hand-holding the client. And it's not really fair to expect him not to get paid a suitable amount for that time. So
yeah,
I think it's a flawed argument, really.
It really makes sense. It'll be interesting to see how this whole thing dies down. I have to admit, I can't imagine someone hand-holding John Chow when it came to his design or the way they wanted things, but it's an interesting picture nonetheless. So basically, that's all the stories that I had from 45N5 this week. It was kind of a slow week in blogging, but I wanted to actually touch a little bit more about what Chris does. He has designed many sites, including one that I actually purchased off him at one point and then sold to someone else. And, you know, we've talked for forever. So I've kind of watched as you've done different things. You have a personal blog, which is kind of like basically a listing of everything that you're up to on all the different social services and whatnot. And then you have a company site as well. Why don't you tell us a little bit about each of those?
Okay, my personal site is minimology.com, which is, like David said, it's a live stream. It takes my Twitter updates, my Flickr updates, all those sorts of things, and just aggregates them into one place. It's actually based on WordPress, although I've had a couple of people not actually believe me when I told them that. And it's been featured in the .NET magazine in the UK. And quite a few CSS galleries. To be honest, I think it reflects my design style in that it's very minimal, and as Dave has mentioned before, it's locked to a grid. And it also uses M sizing so that you can actually scale the whole site up with your browser font size.
I gotta ask though, what's with the pink?
I love pink. I just wanted to try it, really. I just thought, I want to make a statement, and how am I going to do that? I'm going to use black and pink and white. And I thought nothing made a better statement, really.
So you don't really blog all that much anymore, like actual longer posts and stuff like that. You used to do that back in the day. Why have you kind of changed away from that focus?
I've really just not had time to actually sort of get down and write decent articles. And I thought, if I'm not going to write full articles, I might as well go the extreme other way. And just keep really short sort of tumble log posts and Twitter updates and keep them more frequent, so I can just sort of let people know what's going on without making them read through a 800-word article or whatever.
No, it really works well for you. And then there's another blog that kind of hasn't been getting too much attention, probably because you've been busy, and that's on your company site. And why don't you tell us a little bit about your company?
Well, my company is Chris Garrett Media, LTD. Essentially what it is I'm actually a freelance designer, although on the site I do my best to convince you that I'm actually several people. Basically I specialized for a long time in user experience design and creating websites for clients which were accessible and highly usable to their clients or customers. But at the moment, as of Friday, I'm actually making quite a huge change with my career, and I'm moving away from working for clients and hoping to build a few online properties on my own, which I will hopefully be able to make a decent living from. So kind of going more like you, David, in that along the pro blogger route, but there's going to be a mixture of web apps and blogs in there. Hopefully I'll come out with a profitable network of sites.
I have to admit that applications are probably far more profitable in the long run than blogs, but definitely having a balance of both of them would stand you in good stead. Have you already launched any of them, or are they coming soon, or do you have any URLs that we can keep an eye on?
I've launched one, which is Twittums. That's twittums, which was a really quick site to build. It's just a URL shortening service, quite similar to Tiny URL, but much nicer looking. And actually, this week I'm hoping to finish off a blog I've been working on for quite a long time, which is going to be at tvo.com, which is T-W-E-V-I-E-O. And that will be a TV-focused blog. And there'll be other things like trailers and things like that there. And then at the end of the month, I'm also hoping to release a social music application. But I don't want to give too much away about that just yet.
Yeah, that's the thing about the online world. It's very competitive, and you kind of got to keep some of those things a little close to the breast pocket so that no one finds out about them. I can totally understand that. One other thing that I wanted to bring up before I let you run away is you and I had talked about this earlier. There are actually two Chris Garretts, and now that you're kind of joining the blogosphere more, we're going to have to work on that a little bit because it's going to get confusing for people. If you go to Google and you search for Chris Garrett, the first result is Chris Garrett, the writer, and the second result
only
right
recently
now,
though, I was ahead of him for quite a long time.
You had to add that in, eh? So, you know, that's got to be kind of one of those weird things for you. I'm lucky in that no one else in the world is going to have my last name. You know, if you go back to the history of how my family got this last name, it was more or less made up. You know, you, on the other hand, you have another person who does internet marketing or considers himself a new media consultant. And, you know, that's kind of in the same vein that you're going to be in. You know, how do you deal with something like that? How are you going to take back that first spot? And has it affected your business at all or created any kind of confusion?
Well, for a long time, the other Chris Garrett was an ASP developer. And I obviously had no interest in ASP, so I always stood out as being Chris Garrett, the designer. Mm-hmm. And he was Chris Garrett, the ASP developer. But then he kind of became a blogger, which I started to get people. I remember once actually a lady requested authorization to see me on Skype. And she asked me if I was going to be attending some seminar for bloggers in Holland. And I kind of had no idea what she was talking about. And she was sort of expecting me to go there and speak in front of all these other bloggers. And I was sort of saying, I don't blog. And she thought I was joking. And then in the end, I actually realized it. She was actually referring to the other Chris Garrett. So, and the other Chris Garrett has also had quite a lot of leads for me as a designer going to him just by pure mistake, really. So it's kind of been, actually it's been, I'd say it's been good for business actually, because when people sort of have gone to him, it's kind of been an interesting story to tell the client that there's actually two of us. Mm-hmm. With the same name. And that it's kind of, I've already been able to sort of build up a rapport with the client, just on the fact there's something a bit funny going on. And actually when people have come to me expecting me to be Chris Garrett, the blogger, some of them have actually then turned around and engaged my design services. So it's kind of been a way to actually build up lead.
So you guys are kind of promoting each other now.
Yeah.
Indirectly, but.
We just need to get the Chris Garrett, the surgeon, on site now, and we'll occupy the front page of Google.
That's definitely one of those interesting issues. I'm actually kind of surprised that one of you or the other one of you hasn't really focused more like just purely on a business name and hiding your personal name so that you can kind of, you know, segregate yourself away from that issue. But, you know,
I think that's kind of hard with the industry we're in though, because I find actually that while on my site, I sort of refer to myself as we all the time, and it's really impersonal. And I've come to realize that people actually like a kind of personal touch. Mm-hmm. With anything kind of involving creative or new media. So to actually go away from calling myself Chris Garrett, I think that might be detrimental, really. Even if I kind of got back to number one on Google, I should point out that's google.com. I'm still number one on google.co.uk.
Well, that search doesn't matter. Everyone knows that.
Yeah.
It's all interesting how that whole thing works. And hopefully you and he can continue to keep up a good rapport as you kind of step on each other's toes a little bit more and more in the markets that you guys are entering. It'd be really interesting to see Chris Garrett take on some design skills. The other Chris Garrett take on some design skills, and you continue to build up a blogging empire or a new media empire. So it'd create even more brand confusion because who gets what for when?
We'll have to start a company together, and that would be ultimately confusing. Chris Garrett and Chris Garrett Company.
Yeah, Garrett and Garrett.
Yeah.
Oh boy. It's definitely an interesting mess. And, you know, I kind of understand where you're coming from by being able to promote each other, but at the same time, you got to wonder what clients are thinking when they come across the wrong Chris Garrett. So it's really actually interesting.
The other Chris Garrett did have this interesting idea of referring to me as Chris Garrett, the younger one, and then him, Chris Garrett, the older one, or just sort of changing it. So one's called Christopher, or one's called Chris, or one's called C and one's called Chris. So that's that sort of thing. Slightly altering our name.
Yeah, yeah.
Spelling well, Garrett with one T.
He doesn't promote his last name as much anymore, actually. I've noticed him going by Chris G pretty much everywhere now. So, you know, his site
yeah,
is
that was what he used to do.
Yeah, yeah.
He used to be Chris G, and then he decided he was going to target me.
Well, it's interesting, that's for sure. And one last thing, I know we're running a little bit long on this podcast, but Chris brought this up before the podcast, and I'm a new Nintendo Wii owner, and Chris definitely knows how to do some good designing and some great CSS in the whole nine yards. He saved my butt a few times. And you had mentioned that designing for the Wii is different, or like how does that come into play?
Well, I think I've been working on a site for the Wii this week, actually. And the biggest problem is the resolution, because you've only got sort of 640 by about 400 pixels to use. So it's really awkward, because with the Wii, I don't know, the scroll is horrible on the Wii. Seriously, there's no scroll bar, which, well, to be fair, it's actually a better mechanism than anything else that exists. It actually beats the scroll bar in terms of usability, but people have come to expect a scroll bar.
Yep.
So they're kind of breaking conventions, and that's even more detrimental than actually just making a really bad system, I think. So you want to try and keep everything above the fold, but you've only got 400 pixels to play with. So it's kind of, that's my biggest concern when I'm designing for the Wii, is actually keeping things above the fold. But also then as well, you've got to be careful about how much actual interactivity you're allowing on one page, because it's so hard to actually make things, make accurate clicks on the Wii.
I have to zoom in a few times before I can get, you know, certain links on certain people's pages.
Yeah, and you have to have really big buttons and really big font size, which is quite a nightmare when you're designing a blog for the Wii. I'm not actually done a blog for the Wii yet, but I'm not looking forward to it, to be honest, when I come to do it.
There is WordPress plugins, though, now. Like, there's one, like the Gamers Pack or something along those lines, that's supposed to help kind of shape the user experience so that it looks better for WordPress users on Safari, but I haven't heard too much about that one. I think it's basically just checking to see what browser type it is and displaying a different style sheet dependent on what browser you're using. If you're using the Opera or Opera browser on the Wii, it shows you a different style sheet than if you're using it on your Mac or whatever. So I think a lot of that kind of stuff, targeting different client systems like the iPhone and the Wii and all these other ones, are definitely a growth market and something that a lot of bloggers and any site designers should be aware of as they proceed in the future, because, you know, mobile clients or browsing on your TV, it's here to stay, and it's increasingly difficult for designers to kind of work around the limitations that are imposed by those devices, as you mentioned. So
I think also now is the time that we stop doing HTML and CSS websites and start doing XML and XSLT websites, so that actually we're not restricted just to serving up a specific style sheet for a browser. We could actually serve up a specific HTML structure by changing the XSLT template. that we're using for one specific platform or browser.
Which is way more flexible than anything you can do with CSS alone.
Definitely, definitely. And it will minimize, because like when you use a CSS, even if you're hiding like some images or something because the platform won't really won't really handle them very well, you've still got that page load there. Whereas using XSLT and binding it to the XML or PHP, you can actually restrict that page load because you're not actually bothering to output that HTML in the first place and then hiding it. So.
And if all of that is over your head, go to Google, search for XML and XSLT, learn that stuff because it is really interesting. I've done some basic stuff before from, you know, the w3schools.com. They have some stuff on there that you can find. It's really not that hard to learn. It's just one more step over XML and CSS, and it definitely can change the way you develop your sites.
Yeah, as long as you don't want it to work in Internet Explorer.
Thanks again, Chris, for coming on. I really appreciate that. If you guys want to check out Chris Garrett's blog or his company site, I'll have the links for that in the show notes. It's really great stuff. I look forward to seeing his new sites. You do amazing stuff, and I'm going to continue to watch with bated breath. And if you put up anything for sale, you better tell me first. thanks again, Chris.
Thanks for having me. Speak to you soon.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye.